Test. Soundcheck. Right, so everything is working. Welcome to the last lecture, number 9. In the course Introduction to Digital Forensics. Today we're going to talk about, let's say, future challenges and opportunities. I'm also going to show a few examples of application, for example, of Internet of Things, artificial intelligence, and so on. So technically, you know, technologies that you might see in your projects, in your future study, and later in your career. Right, so I hope all of you read the book and all of the chapters. It's a really nice book. I think it's 2017. The same authors actually produced recently a new book 5 years later, a little bit different topics, but you could also check this book online. Right, so we had also the last... doesn't work. We had the last guest lecture. It's the certifications that Mudassart explained. He's one of the people with a large background and let's say a lot of different certifications that they took during the career. Some of the announcements. So I have checked all of the submissions that you sent, the presentation of your group. The paper presentations, that's really nice. So most of the people and groups submitted, so very good job. This part is done. I'd like to mention also that if you need to change the composition of your group, meaning that if you want to, or during the work on the project and the paper, you changed, for example, one member added or one member quit the group, so please talk to me and make sure that on the Blackboard you have the most up-to-date composition of the group so that all members are included. If not, just send me an email because I will need to give this information to the exam office later for submission of your proposals, project reports. They need to create groups so that all members of the group will get the same grade. So the next deadline is 23rd and 24th of November, 15 minutes presentation of your project. So you can spend up to 12, for example, minutes presenting projects, and there might be a question from Guo Chang about content, methodology, and used experiments. Now, in Inspira, if you've seen on the webpage, the submission page opens on 21st of November, and it closes on 25th of November at 12 o'clock, so you can check it on the web page. So make sure that you submit your project report on time. I also put a file called, yes, please. In Inspira. So the way we did it last year, it was that we sent, you know, the group composition because you already registered in the group in Blackboard. Just make sure that, you know, all of the members are there, and then I will give this information to exam office, so they will create this the same group in Inspira. So I put the file project description on in the folder Learning Materials on Blackboard, so please check this file. It includes all of the, let's say, requirements for the project. It should be no more than 12 pages. You can include standard, you know, sections like introduction, background, literature review, methodology, experiments, and analysis of the results. The exam is 7th of December, but you'll have to check more specifically, like which room, for example, and what time your exam takes place. So please refer to NTNU and also Student Web. Any other questions about the projects? One thing, if you have any challenges, you know, if you cannot really see the way forward with the project, like which technologies, tools use, just reach out to me so that I can guide and help you with the topic. So the overview of the lecture today, we're going to talk more about, let's say, data analytics, because in most of the cases we are dealing with a lot of data, so-called big data paradigm, meaning that, you know, the data travels, for example, at the high speed in the network. We have so much data stored on the hard drive, and it's really difficult to process. That's one of the main challenges in digital forensics, and now we can see that, you know, some smarter technologies being applied, like in autopsy. If you've seen, they have a lot of ingest modules. You can, for example, look for the patterns of, I don't know, emails, for the patterns of the credit cards, numbers, and so on. So technically, pre-processing, where the tool helps you to extract some relevant pieces of information. Computational forensics, this is not computer forensics. Computational forensics is a discipline where we apply AI or computational intelligence to solve some of the, let's say, problems to, you know, match, for example, some footprints, fingerprints, so everything that handles with the computer modeling. Right, big data. Have you seen this poster from IBM before? It's actually one of the fundamental posters that in very simple way explains the problem with data that we have now. So originally it was 4Vs. It's actually called 4Vs of big data. We have the volume, meaning that there is so much data affiliated with digital forensics. Like, you know, in some of the economic crimes investigations, you know, it can be, for example, terabytes, hundreds of terabytes of data. So why it's big data? Because you can't really put it on a computer and process in a reasonable amount of time. So you need to have a specific platform for doing this. You need to have a high performance computing, storage, and things like this. Velocity, so we talked about volume. Velocity is the speed, meaning that the data travels so fast. Like, for example, if we have the network in the large organizations, you know, it can be 1 gigabit, it can be 10 gigabits per second, and we can't really store all of the data, right? We cannot really like dump it and, you know, have 6 months' storage. Unfortunately, it's so much data that we need to pick up only, you know, some crucial things like net flow information that will be relevant for incident response or digital forensics. Variety is, you know, the range of applications. Like in autopsy, you probably have seen that when you click on the file, there is a preview opening in the bottom of the page, meaning that autopsy has actually embedded file processing, so they can open multiple data formats. And there are so many different formats. Like, you know, in, if you take, I don't know, Ubuntu, Linux, Debian, they now have like 400 or even more different file types that they have applications affiliated for. So it's a huge, huge data storage. Veracity is about, let's say, I would say rather challenges with the data. Like we have typos, we have errors, mistakes in the data, we have corrupted files. We still need to do something with such data, right? We cannot just delete. So it's about veracity. And most of the tools, like in this course, the example is autopsy. You could see that, well, technically you can have capabilities to process large-scale data. Like autopsy offers also a distributed data processing, right? You can build, for example, a cluster where multiple people can work on the case documents simultaneously. Now, but what's the point of having these four data? Is to create the value. So for digital forensics, the value is those traces and pieces of digital data that are relevant for the crime investigation based on the hypothesis that been formulated. So often is extracting data. Like what is the point of storing 100 terabytes of data if we don't extract anything, right? So it means that, like, in every case when we store the data, and it's huge data, we need to have the point of storage that, you know, we extract the data. Maybe we do some analytics. Maybe we look for attack patterns in the log files, some malicious files on the disks, and so on. Nobody stops us from adding more Vs, right? So we can have 42 Vs of big data. Of course, it's ridiculous, and this is just a joke. But technically, you know, people working with data analysis, they try to describe the complexity of the whole thing. And that's the problem with digital forensics, because as you've seen, we have some basic ingest modules in autopsy. We have keyword search. We have kind of manual e-discovery, but they don't really have the neural network embedded, right? That can, for example, find some smart patterns. So that's the problem here, that with the complexity of the data, we need to apply intelligent methods. So the big data becomes more complex, and we can see the occurrence of the terminology, like, you know, the fundamental variety, volume, velocity been there already 20 years. So now we have so much data that it's hard to, you know, to imagine 20 years ago, you know, having a hard disk of 1 gigabyte was considered to be a normal disk that can host, for example, Windows, you know, early versions like, you know, 95 or something. But now, you know, the laptops like 4-8 terabytes. So at some point, like, for example, there will be a course called Data Science for Security and Forensics, where you're going to learn how to use AI, machine learning, and data science for processing data, making, let's say, decisions, using the AI for decision support, you know, making intelligent analytics. But it's a combination, so you can't really use, you know, data science without any knowledge. So you need the computer science, you need the digital forensics, and you need the mathematical models to understand. Like one of the examples, the projects where we look at the malware using artificial intelligence. Like, what if we want to find some smart patterns that can indicate that, you know, this particular file is a Trojan horse, another particular file is a worm. Of course, you know, like, people tend to use too much AI, and sometimes everyone thinks that, you know, AI can solve together with the data analysis, but it has to be a reasonable application. Like, IBM had a incident response and a system used for digital forensics, where they connected, you know, some of the AI models. So they've been using carefully. So we're not in the let's say age yet where AI can, you know, make autonomous decisions. So it's mostly to support decision making process. Also, as I mentioned before, we have a lot of opportunities and challenges with Internet of Things, because the number of devices is growing around us, and they all collect data, often private data or personal identifiable information. So of course, this data is stored somewhere, and when we have a need to analyze the data to respond to a case, there might be issues how to extract, because, you know, the infrastructure might be under attack, meaning that somebody could have stolen the data, or somebody could have placed a malicious software in the IoT network, like, for example, Mirai botnet. Have you heard about Mirai botnet? So that's the example that, let's say, that was the point of no return when people, or let's say the cybersecurity community, thought that, well, we couldn't have major attacks from IoT, but then suddenly it happened, and then people start, you know, thinking that, well, we need to consider this component as well. So the amount of data differs. Like, you know, if we take IoT device and sensors, IoT hubs, it's like up to gigabytes of data. It's not a lot, but still they have some important information stored. If you go further into the cloud, there will be data lakes. So this is where all our data stored and often need to be processed. The same, we also have a number of cyber threats that can cause a cyber attack, that can cause, for example, a crime being committed because there is an opportunity to exploit device. Like if you go to Shodan.io, right, that's one of the fanciest websites used for data collection about IoT and devices, their security and availability, you could see that many of the devices across the globe, they either don't have any authentication or they have some standard, you know, login passwords like admin, where you can just enter the device and do whatever you like. So of course we are facing more complex attacks on the general scale. Like I've been just, you know, scrolling through Shodan IO, and then, you know, so many different things that people put on the internet, like, you know, it was kind of like a monitoring device, temperature, you know, humidity, pressure, where like you could, this information alone doesn't give you like anything, but if you're smart as an attacker, you could think that, well, if the temperature is increasing, maybe there are people inside, so you can kind of like do some kind of reconnaissance even based on the simple readings. So we have a lot of storage also. So because the storage is where the data is stored, like it's not just, for example, having a simple like Arduino boards, Arduino Uno Wi-Fi, but also more complex scenarios when we have phones, we have tablets, for example, we have smart systems. So I would say that normal storage in the you know, CCTV cameras, at least home appliances and smart homes, it's already like between 16 and 64 gigabytes. Of course, for the phones, we have already like half terabyte storage. There are a lot of data generated by the devices, so we're kind of moving towards machine-to-machine communication, meaning that to collect all of the data, it's not just data at rest, so the data that is on the device, but also data in transit, meaning that we need to intercept all possible communication in the network. And then, like if you look, for example, at campus, we have Wi-Fi points, we have some kind of radio frequency devices, we have RFID readers. So everything around us is a communication, and this communication channel can be, for example, eavesdrop. Now, speaking about cybercrime, so you already know what is cybercrime convention, the Budapest Convention. It's a pillar in modern legal system and used and referenced a lot. However, when it comes to a particular kind of classification of crimes, you'll find several approaches. Like, for example, we have type 1. Crimes where the computer or ICT technology is a target, so somebody attacks a server. We have type 2, where the computer is a tool to commit a crime, when, for example, somebody is using a laptop to attack a server. So this laptop is a tool, right? It's the same like as a gun, for example, used to commit a murder, the same way a computer is used to attack another instance of server, for example. And there are subcategories like unauthorized access, malicious code, interruption of services, theft or misuse of services. So it's not just, let's say, a conventional DDoS attack, because in my view, DDoS became a very powerful tool, and sometimes you could see services like DDoS as a tool, DDoS as a service, where, on the dark web you can get options to attack some organization by means of multiple bots deployed on the vulnerable computers. So type 2 is the content violations, unauthorized access and alteration of the data on the computer storage in the memory, and the improper usage of communication. So you can see that there are a lot of categories that can describe every aspect. Like if you can say that this keyboard is a part of the crime scene because it was used to type the commands that were used to attack a server. So there are a lot of attribution, but also there are a lot of categorization of resources used in the particular scenario. So you can see that, you know, malicious code, there are a lot of different types. We have types, we have also categories, more general, let's say, types, and we have families. So the families is a particular type of a malware, like, for example, Petya. All of you know Petya virus, so we can say that it's, you know, a ransomware, and then it's the type, and then the family name is Petya. Of course, there are multiple variants. So as I mentioned, you know, the crime is not just one dimension where we have a computer that been attacked, but also the dimension where, for example, a computer was used to commit a crime, like sharing, for example, illegal content, or sharing, for example, you know, pirated content, like you know, the even though there are multiple initiatives across Europe, we still have websites where you can download, you know, Game of Thrones without registration, or Justin Bieber without registration, all this kind of stuff that is available. So technically it falls in the second category of cyber crimes. And of course, a lot of fraud. So fraud is, you know, all types of fraudulent actions, and you know, you might have a very complex modus operandi of cybercrime when you get, for example, a phishing attack that leads, you know, to data being stolen, and that leads to a fraud being committed because of, like, some pieces of personal identifiable information is being leaked. So often we see, you know, this paradigm like crime as a service. We have ransomware as a service, we have malware as a service, we have a DDoS attack as a service. So everything becomes kind of like, you know, crowdsourced. And the problem that, you know, it's not just one entity, you know, that sits in a castle that attacks everything. It's just, you know, it can be normal people that have, you know, like normal jobs, but they involved in the you know, in the criminal networks, like, for example, well-known Silk Road, the website, you know, that was that had a huge revenues in the dark market, underground market, and then the main founder of this website was just an average person, and it was him. He was actually captured while sitting in the library, so there wasn't like any, you know, big thing. So digital forensics, as I mentioned in this course, is the is rather a range of disciplines, depending like on what's the application. Like Android forensics, they develop all of the tools, like hardware, software tools for extracting data from Android. They can be network forensics, which is more on how to extract relevant information from the network flow. And of course, the process combines multiple steps. As I mentioned, the first part is in the, let's say, on the crime scene, when, you know, the field work, when people or first responders, they come and they secure, you know, the devices, they try to extract the data, they try to preserve the evidences. And then later phase is the rather extraction and analysis of the data. So this is where AI can find a very good application. Just an example of, let's say, subtasks that can be performed on each step, like identification, preparation, approach, strategy, preservation, then collection, examination, analysis, data presentation. So at every point you have a certain data-related task where, you know, there is a need to process the data, there is a need to make a linkage, for example, there is a need to find some pieces of evidences, there is a need to make data transformation. So at every point, you will have some kind of task where AI can be beneficial. So all of the cases or cybercrime cases, they become very data intense. It means that, you know, we have not just megabytes, but terabytes, hundreds of terabytes of data. Plus, it's not just data stored in one place, but it can be distributed like social networks. There can be most likely storage, cloud storage, like, you know, phones. Just imagine how many apps you have, and in some cases, every app has own cloud provider. So it's enormous amount of information being stored in the cloud thanks to your phone. And of course, IoT. So that's you know, the kind of constellation of devices that either process, store, transmit data, collect data, and then you know, even not all of the data that IoT devices collect can be transferred to the cloud, for example, because they had to discard some of the data in order to save battery and memory place. So everything nowadays, as you can see, connected to big data. We have enormous amount of websites, and it's growing. We have enormous amount of mobile phones that grows every, you know, in every direction, because people, you know, changing the buttons phone to like smartphones. Sometimes you get like two phones, sometimes you get three phones for various purposes. The amount of emails also increasing. Like if before, like 20 years ago, we had more person-to-person communication, so email was a part of the correspondence, like a normal mail, you know, paper mail was the same as email. Now we got this transition towards machine-to-machine communication, when you get emails automatically because of the some activity, right? So it might be relevant, it might not be relevant to a committed crime. Of course, we cannot really store all of the data, especially in IoT devices. Some of the data are stored in the cloud, and it means that we cannot really process all of the data that, you know, affiliated with the infrastructure. So unfortunately, it's too much data, too much to analyze. I'm not even talking about manual analysis while we sit and, you know, check all of the files in autopsy. This is task only for AI, where, you know, we have the task and then we apply the method to the data, and then the method gives us some kind of recommendation or some kind of like solution or rules from the data. So this is what's called computational forensics. I'm sure some of you in your master projects will deal with malware analysis using AI, or will handle, for example, some of the evidences analysis like emails, logs, using AI. The whole advantage is to have automated processing. As I mentioned, if we have hundreds of terabytes and we have one police officer, without additional pre-processing, it's not possible to check all of the data. So we need to have some kind of recommendation that's saying, well, most likely we have encrypted files in that directory, and most likely we have some kind of pictures of people in another directory. So some kind of like intelligent algorithm that can, you know, process and give results in a defined format. It's one of the prominent examples of the computational forensics, as I mentioned, is the application of, let's say, methods, scientific methodologies to improve, let's say, the speed and quality of the data processing related to a crime scene. Like on the left side, on the left picture, you could see a comparison of the footprint, like shoe footprint. There was a let's say, a footprint from the crime scene that was found, and then there is a known shoe, for example, found in the perpetrator home. And then through analysis, I mean, it's not just simply taking the picture, but there is a mechanics where, let's say, a shoe footprint scanned, and then, you know, they've been defined some features, attributes, that can be used, and then those attributes are compared in two cases, the one from the crime scene and the one from known shoe. And then in the end, you can get, for example, 0 point something, or like, let's say 90%, you know, it's the same shoe that was used in the crime scene, or 99. Of course, you know, like having 90% and going to later to a court of law, it's not, let's say, 100%, right? So you still need to do some additional evaluation. You still need to perform some additional fact checks that, you know, that, okay, this hypothesis is supported by, you know, that the outcome of the footprint analysis, and then some additional facts. Another application is skull recognition using picture. So there was developed a methodology like a decade ago, where, or more than a decade ago, where they had a skull of a person found somewhere, and then they had pictures, or one or multiple pictures, of people who went missing. And then they use some kind of superimposition and soft computing to kind of match the photo and the skull, if it's the same person or not. So that's a super novel technology that could help to identify missing people and the skeletons if they were found somewhere. Speaking about the digital forensics and you know, application of AI, there is always so-called hybrid intelligence. It means that we are not using standard tools like neural network on large-scale data set, because those methods were developed in 80s, 90s. They cannot handle large-scale data. So there is a optimization, or adding a second machine learning artificial intelligence method that can help to, you know, to speed up, because it's too much data, new ways to commit a crime, but at least we can have this, you know, combination of methods to be able to extract what we need in the final stage. So it's the big data, human-like reasoning, and tiny pieces of evidences. And, you know, always we are dealing with different types of data. As I mentioned, data at rest, so it can be, you know, just a hard drive from a computer, or it can be data in transit, meaning that we have data traveling through network that have to be analyzed and included in the model. And it's always a challenge when we're working with the stream data, network data. You know, like, you need to think carefully what kind of features and indicators are used in the analysis. Now, so as I mentioned, we need to have a hypothesis, like what was the crime committed for, what's like the purpose, who was, let's say, the motivation, who was involved, what are the victims, witnesses, what are the affiliated technologies, whether it was against a computer, or the computer was used against, you know, some server. But here we need to have a hypothesis, so that application of machine learning and AI can support this hypothesis using this advanced processing and advanced analytics. Of course, like, you know, people think that if we have AI, you just throw all of the data and the AI throws back, you know, like some nice solution. Doesn't work that way. So AI won't throw at you the ready-to-use, you know, kind of pieces of evidences. You still need to do the processing. It's called feature extraction or feature selection. Often, like we, for example, sometimes do image processing or signal processing when we have a picture and we need to compare that, you know, the photo on the picture is the same as, for example, a real person, right? Or if we have a voice recognition, like we have, for example, recording from a camera of a voice, and then we have a real person, so we need to match. Computer vision identification of the objects, like in some of the tools like Cellebrite Reader, they have identification of the objects on the photos automatically. Data visualization is one of the most powerful tools in the data analysis, so you can use you know, just one plot, simple feature that will represent like hundreds of terabytes of data. But you need to use, you know, properly the attribute selection and the feature extraction. And of course, the recognition, simple recognition, if, you know, something belongs to a particular class or something belongs, for example, to a set of classes, so that, you know, you can recognize that it's the same dog as we had, for example, in the pictures through the mobile phone memory. It's not a break yet. Computational forensics. I think I jumped over the slide. So this one. So computational methods. How many of you try to use neural network, for example? Have you tried things like RapidMiner, Weka? Right, so that's the task for data science in the next semester, when you're going to see how, for example, you can use neural network to categorize computer viruses like, I don't know, worms, Trojan horses, and so on. The whole idea that you have an algorithm, so it's just a simple algorithm like in neural networks, where you do some processing of the data, like you put, for example, a data set in the in this algorithm or this model. You train it, for example, 100 times, and then you get a very accurate model, maybe 95%, that gives you a possibility to differentiate between Trojan horse and for example, the worm, right? And it, you know, we can use different types of characteristics like file size, number of I don't know, functions in the import table, you know, the number of fields in the P header, a compilation time, which might not always be a trustworthy indicator, and then, you know, multiple things that characterize a file in a quantitative way. So, you know, the P header is 120, 130 different fields. So technically, you can simply create, you know, a model that is based on just on the P header. Of course, people use opcode analysis, like machine code analysis, like what's the most common, for example, n grams of the opcode, and what is the most common, for example, byte sequence. So sometimes people use byte sequence in such models. Of course, like we're dealing with multiple, let's say, data. It's like if you just need to analyze, you know, simple images and extract some kind of like understanding, how many images of animals, how many images of houses we have. It can be a little bit more complex, like blockchain. You know, and everything affiliated with the cryptocurrencies. Like you probably know the case of Anna Elisabeth Hagen, where, you know, the cryptocurrencies were involved in the criminal way. And unfortunately, you know, you can't really break it easily, because, you know, that's the point actually of having, you know, the blockchain, bitcoins, and cryptocurrencies, that you need to spend some computational power to validate the blocks. That's, let's say, the current state of the cryptography. Of course, if we apply quantum computers later on, hypothetically, we could crack, you know, crypto primitives, and we can influence, you know, how blockchain works. And of course, robotics. So the application of robots, like what if there was a crime scene committed where, a crime committed at the scene where we find a robot? Is it a witness? Can it be considered as a witness? Is it a perpetrator? Is it a victim? Does this robot contain any relevant data? So it might be a very tricky kind of, you know, consideration. Some machine learning, let's see, I talked about this one, the machine learning. Again, like I mentioned, AI, pattern recognition, data mining. Machine learning is one of the fields of AI where we train a machine, right? So, for example, we have a neural network deployed on the phone, and we say that we want to recognize microphone and we want to recognize a screen. So every time we make a picture of microphone or a screen, the phone will give us an answer, like what is the class of the object. So this is a simple example of machine learning. So to train this, we need some kind of data, right? So we need to say to the phone or to the model in the phone that this is a screen and this is microphone. Like, what are the features? It's big and it's, you know, rectangular. The microphone is kind of like a small object. So there can be multiple features like this, defining, you know, the properties of the objects. And then normally we talk about training and testing. So that's two different types. In the training phase, we do a supervised learning. So we say that, you know, we just kind of point towards microphone. We say this is microphone, points towards screen, they say this is screen. In the testing, we do the opposite. We point towards object and the phone gives us the answer based on the characteristics of the particular object. It sounds very simple, but in reality, it's the constellation of different methods. Like, first of all, we need to understand how to process the image of the microphone. It's not that easy, and it will depend on the data. Like, image data has one set of methods. If it's, let's say, data from sensors, there will be time series analysis to create features. And of course, different types of features. Like, what if I extract 100 fields that characterize computer virus, but in a matter of fact, we just need 5. So we need to select which 5 features influence this classification or which has the biggest merit. And then finally, machine learning methods. You know, there are tens of different methods. I mentioned already neural network. There are support vector machine, tree-based methods. So you need to see, like, what is the application. Of course, neural network is one of the most, like, prominent and powerful solutions, but sometimes you also may need to use, like, KNN, for example, or SVM. So this is the topic for the next semester. Also, hard and soft computing. As I mentioned, if we look in general at the machine learning and AI development, let's say 80s, 90s were the most of the, let's say, algorithms were developed. They were designed for small standard data. So this is like conventional computing called hard computing. So we have clear data without any errors, typos. We put it to the method and the method can give us solution. But what if we have a real world data like big data, many typos, you know, irregularities? Of course, in this case, we need to use some kind of inexact solution, and we need to, let's say, tolerate these typos and tolerate these mistakes and errors in the data. So that's the soft computing often used in decision support systems. Now, speaking about understandability of the outcome of AI. So, like, the one on the left is a hard solution that defines us, you know, specifically parameters of the outcome of this model. Like, we have, you know, the speed, for example, we have the weight and so on. The model on the right gives us more human understandable solution, right? So if we don't understand what the numbers on the left say, we cannot really be alerted. But if we understand it in a low threshold AI outcome, like look out, of course it will be more understandable. And then it comes also to the point where, you know, the complexity of this model, like you can extract a simple model that will be very efficient, will be fast, will be easy to understand, or you can extract like a decision tree, which will be a super complex and, you know, special model that it's hardly possible to apply in real-world scenario. So for the computer program, and it's often used, you know, as a criteria for AI. Like, to be able to train, you need to define the data. Like in the case of microphone and the screen, we have the data, pictures of screen and microphone. We need to have a task, so the task will be classification, so classifying between the object. Like in Cellebrite Reader, they have classification of images. And the performance measures, like it's important not just to train the model, but also see that it produces correct results, right? So if you train the phone to recognize two objects, but in the end of the day, the accuracy that it recognizes microphone as microphone and computer as computer is like 10%, well, we cannot really use it in real world scenario. So it means that we need to change something. So the whole idea is to understand, like, what's the, you know, data, what's the performance, and what's the task, so that we can use it properly and it makes sense. Like often we're talking about the model, like machine learning model. In this case, you know, it can be a simple set of parameters that we train, like a neural network. Simple neural network. We have weights, right? We have the input data, and we have the output data. And we say when that neural network is trained, when these two weights are adjusted properly so that they describe all input data. So that's the training process. So in most of the models, and of course you will see it later, we are talking about, let's say, input data, output data, and some model in between, which is trained automatically. So if, you, for example, you're using Python libraries related to AI, in most of the cases you will have, you know, the opportunities, for example, to select particular model, select the CSV file that you use, and then you know, say what will be the prediction of this model. So when it comes to model building, we need to have a very good quality data. So it can be, of course, like real world data with some typos, but in general, you know, the data should represent a real world scenario. And then we'll have the generalization on how to apply this model to fit the data, so that the model kind of describes the data properly. And the example that I mentioned, if the phone recognizes only 10% of the screens and microphones, this is a bad AI model, so we need to change it. And then the application. So it depends on the application. As I mentioned, like you need to, a few slides back, you need to understand what's the task that you're trying to solve. It can be classification, to classify two objects. It can be clustering, unsupervised, where we need to ask phone to find five objects on the table to recognize five objects. This is a completely different scenario. A simple machine learning example is the wood classification. Like, for example, we have two types of wood, the pine and birch, and two attributes that we could measure from, let's say, from these woods are overall brightness and grain prominence. Of course, as I mentioned, you can measure like hundreds of different attributes, but it's not often required. It's good to have more, but sometimes you'll get the same accuracy for, let's say, 100 attributes as well as for 5 attributes. But using more attributes means that you'll need to allocate more memory, like 20 times more memory units. Like if you have 4 bytes integer number, you'll need like 5 integer numbers versus 100 integer numbers. So on the large scale data set, it will be a dramatic increase in required memory, right? So we measured these two properties, and what we can see that Actually, pine will be located somewhere here, and the birch trees will be located in other, let's say, region. So it means that we selected good attributes and we can differentiate between the objects in this example. So after, for example, we checked like 10, 20 different trees, we could see that, you know, the pine trees samples are located in this region and the birch tree samples, they're located in that in the other region. So it means that we have a good quality data. Our hypothesis about features were correct, was correct, and we can use these features for, let's say, creating a model, training machine learning model. And then, like, if we get a new, for example, samples that we don't really know, whether it's birch or pine tree, we can ask machine learning, based on the previous data and features, what is the class of a new tree sample? So that will be the outcome of machine learning model. And of course, like, you can, you know, you can have a probabilistic model saying that this is 90% of the tree, 90% that this is a pine tree, or 10% that this is a birch tree, for example. So when it comes to digital forensics, let's make a quick break until 15:15. And then we start again at 15:15. So seven minutes break, 8 minutes. right. So we're going to talk now about, let's say, more specific applications. I hope you already got an overview of, things that one can use AI for and what's the AI and how it's deployed. Well, of course, this will be a topic next semester as a part of IMT 4133 data science for forensics and security. It's a super exciting course where you learn how to deploy models and how to use tools, because in this context you don't really need to write neural network from the scratch. In this context you only need to apply tools and Python libraries, for example, to process the data and to extract some meaning. When it comes to digital forensics applications, we need to think of what kind of data we have. Like if it's intrusion detection, most likely we are talking about network data. Like it can be packet size, data size or data payload in the packet, TTL time, knowledge sequence. It can be, for example, if it's used encryption or not. So multiple characteristics to recognize whether it's an attack packet or a normal traffic. Malware is actually one of the most exciting areas where the AI is, can do very well, because as you know, normally we have antivirus solutions that are working based on the signatures, like signatures of specific malware, for example, a Trojan or worm ransomware. It doesn't really work well when we have some kind of combinations of factors, like if it's a malware that had been modified but nobody's seen it before, so most likely it will be not detected as malware. The advantage of machine learning is that even though it's a different let's say characteristics of the particular malware file, it still can detect it as a malware. Here is an example. Like even though like the new sample is a little bit different from already existing samples, it still can detect that it's, like in this case, Pine or Birch. The same applies for malware. And of course, for crime investigation, we have text analysis, we have image recognition, we have analysis of the encryption, whether what kind of entropy. Based on the entropy, we can say if it was compressed or maybe it was encrypted, and so on. So more like automated analysis of data on the hard drive. So machine learning or artificial intelligence, it's not magic. As I mentioned, you can't really throw the data and expect that you'll get a very nice slide, describing everything that you have on the hard drive. No. But you need to understand what are the application areas of machine learning and artificial intelligence. So it's all about having a good quality features and attributes. Like, for example, if we analyze malware, we need to have a good representative data set. So all, if we have only two malware samples, two malware types like ransomware and worms, we need to have representative samples for both classes so that we can extract features and we can train this supposedly neural network that will be able to to recognize types of malware. So that's a very important part in the machine learning. So usually when you have a good data, you can build very good model. If you have a data that is a lot of errors and mistakes, then you will see that the model might not be that accurate. So you need to do some fine tuning. And surprisingly, the machine learning often comes to the point where we just measure the distance, right? So if we go back to our example, new sample, the distance between this point and, for example, that's a data sample on this point and this data sample, of course, different. So just by using simple logic that the closer data to the known sample or class label, most likely it is the same, for example, data. So it's all about measuring the distances between the objects. Like, for example, Manhattan distance, we have Euclidean distance, all types of distances applicable in various scenarios. Sometimes we have outliers, let's say the application when we have a data from a hard drive and we need to find a different distinct groups of samples. Let's say we need to find if there are any outstanding doc files, for example, Microsoft Office files that are very, very different. So we don't really know yet which attributes we are looking for, but we need to find if there are any patterns like normal, for example, and abnormal behaviors. In that case, we can apply machine learning to also to find something that is irregular. So actually, that's a very good application. And unsupervised learning in general help us to differentiate. Like if we, for example, have chalk boxes here, right? So they have the same size, maybe a little bit different weight, and one of those open, and then we have a phone and a bottle, and we ask a machine learning model to recognize three types of objects. So in the end of the day, machine learning model, unsupervised clustering method, will say that there are three groups of objects. So we didn't say which objects. The machine learning will find it out based on the attributes of the particular, like for example the color, it can be, you know, the weight of the object, it can be, for example, the size of the object, the volume, and so on. So that's the point of using clustering. It's a very, very powerful method. Like in this case, if we don't really know, we just have pieces of wood, but we don't know like what is the particular, you know, characteristics and what are the different types of the objects there, we just need to look for the attributes and, you know, find these attributes based on the distance. So in this way we can have better understanding that it's pine and birch. But often what happens in real case scenario that we don't have labels, we just have a group of data points and we want to separate them in different groups or categories. So in this way we have the outcome of the method as two groups, but then we need to have a human expert saying that, okay, so those files probably include financial information from one company and that group of files include financial information from another company. So so in our case, the method found some distinct patterns in the data, but evaluation of those patterns and particular labeling will be done by human expert. Like for example, a suspect used computers engaged in illegal activity. So some of the files have been deleted. Like there is probably, you know, a slack space containing some parts of the data. We have some new files that are that have been overwriting, you know, the previously deleted data. So still we have some pieces of information, but we want to use machine learning model to recover partially deleted files, even though, you know, the, for example, the headers can be and the footers can be missing. So it's kind of a file carving task. And then, for example, we know that for the HTML files, we probably have some kind of like tags and structure. And for images, we have, a higher kind of information entropy, probably like 7 bits or something. So having a different characteristics, we can actually spot, you know, these patterns in the data, even though we don't know really what are the files. We just have, you know, pieces of information. So in this way, if we have a good understanding of the patterns, we can transform them into the features or attributes and use as for example, input to neural network. So when we do the training, as I mentioned, there are two stages, training and testing. For the training and model evaluation, we actually need to use only partial part of the data. Like, for example, we use 80% for training, and then we use 20% for testing. In such way, we can evaluate whether the model is good. Like, you probably seen some of the articles, or you read that, you know, neural network can achieve 99.9 classification accuracy performance. 99.9%. So this is where it's evaluated. So we take part of the data. For example, we have four points here, right? We have two chunk boxes, phone and a bottle, and then we take one chunk box out of the picture. So we train a model based on this, and then if we so this is the training data, and if we use this piece of information as a new and ask the model to test this chalk box, so then it will say that, you know, it's indeed a chalk box. Then it's 100% classification accuracy because it classified it correctly. So that's the point of having testing and training data. The approach is different, but in overall we have pre-processing, we have these attributes or properties extraction like weight, color, you know, dimensions, and then we have the training and application of the model. So that's the simple view on how machine learning and artificial intelligence works. There is no free lunch. That comes from the optimization, let's say, area. So if you have a million of samples, you know, the training will take maybe 5 minutes of the neural network. But you can't really speed up it more than that, because still the model needs to have, you know, the complexity. So you can't really have, you know, something that will do it in 1 second, unless it's a GPU computing. But I'm talking about normal architecture. So that's the problem, that with data, sometimes there is a limit on what you can optimize and what you cannot optimize. So there is no free lunch theorem. And also innovations, you probably will see it in other courses in your study, and also probably you've read about, for example, digital forensics incident response together, the open source intelligence, drone forensics. I've been to a forensics expo a few years back in London, and there have been already companies, you know, offering drone forensics, even though, you know, what is drone forensics is just extracting, you know, all the data from micro SD in the drone. So often it's simple as it is. Well, sometimes drones have, of course, like additional memory card, like the battery, just to store like system information. Smart card forensics and application of artificial intelligence and deep learning. So deep learning is basically it's as simple as 3, 4, 10 layers neural network that can handle a very complex data structure. So in overall, everything that is related to data analysis in cybercrime investigation, it's often a challenging task. So we need to have additional tools to simplify our life, to reduce, let's say, the amount of time we spend on it. And it's often possible to achieve it using, you know, artificial intelligence or computational intelligence, you know, being in the field, for example, computational forensics, where we specifically apply a neural network to tackle some challenges related to digital forensics. So that was an overview. It's a little bit, on the edge between data analysis, digital forensics, and artificial intelligence. If you're interested in how, you know, things are working, you will be taking the class next semester. So you'll learn more about, you know, how to use, and of course, you'll get inspiration for your, for example, specialization or master projects later, based on how, you know, AI used for digital forensics. Now, do you have any questions? Yes. Very good question. Thank you. I'll just repeat. So the question is about hybrid intelligence. Let's assume we have neural network, right? Artificial neural network, ANN. And that's a standalone method. So it works very well on data, like real world data. The problem that when you have a trained model, you cannot really explain why these weights are trained like this and why you have these numbers, because it's like a black box solution. To make it understandable, for example, also for digital forensics tasks, you add fuzzy logic. So the fuzzy logic is the method which gives you a human understandable rules, like if, then, else, like very simple, clear, like everyone can understand linguistic terms. But it needs a very sophisticated method to be trained from data. So if you combine two methods, you have a hybrid intelligence. So two standalone methods, they combine together to produce a much better machine learning model. So technically, it's just, you know, you have the input data, and then you have the output data, but it works as a combined method. So I'm also going to talk next semester about it, but the idea is to combine this method so that you can get much better quality, much better classification accuracy than just using one or another method. So just a combination. Hope I answered the question, but very good question. So let's say there are multiple approaches. For example, another way is to use gradient descent or genetic algorithm together with INN to fine-tune it to have like even better accuracy. But that's more like on the optimization side. So it will be next semester. I'm going to talk about these methods and how to use like different libraries also. Yes. Any other questions? So in your master projects, you might also consider, you know, using some intelligent algorithms to process data like network traffic, logs, computer viruses. And I know that a lot of students choose to do so because it creates this kind of task where you need to do like multiple things, not just, you know, collecting the data, but also trying to analyze and build this intelligent AI model. So that can be a task as well. If no question, then thank you very much for attending. That's the last lecture. You still have presentations of your projects and submission of the project. If you need any advice or, you know, you have any questions about the project, please reach out on email. We can also have, for example, Zoom meeting if you find that something is very challenging. But please make sure to do it before 25th of November at 12 o'clock. Yes, thank you.